Monday, December the 5th, 1988.
Very good. You begin.
Now, and you can begin where, exactly where we started, where we stopped. You can remember we stopped at the last meeting.
Have I ever told you about my meeting with Freud?
Yes.
Have I done that? Oh,
yes.
Good.
Yes. Good. I may ask you again.
After I just want to get there. All right, yes. But details are all the words.
Yes, yes.
Continue. Continue. Whatever you want. Just go forward.
Right.
Don't choose. Don't ask.
Yes, because I know you don't like.
Don't ask.
I know.
Just,
I have my questions.
Just go forward.
All right.
Ask your questions.
All
right. I mustn't choose. Which question you going to ask?
I know. But yet...
It might better go forward.
But whenever you want to, don't hesitate. Whenever something comes to you, don't hesitate
to diverge it.
Yes, you don't, really.
All right, yes.
Sometimes I come with questions and I see that you prefer to speak on another topic, so I follow you.
Thank you.
You know.
Continue.
We tried last time to describe your life in All Souls, all along, the ups and downs, your feelings, your attitudes, and we stopped actually in describing All Souls in 1945-50, the period you were in New College. And that, to my amazement, even then...
The period of 1938 to 50.
So, 1938, you were a member.
I went to New College in 38.
Now, in 38, you told me that you were quite miserable in New College. You
no,
didn't like it.
No, no.
Not miserable.
No. Not in 38. That's wrong. That's quite wrong.
You were
32.
No, in New College, not in...
32.
In
New College. That's a muddle. Let me explain.
Uh-huh.
Let me make it plain. After I ceased to be... after I took my final examination in PPE, in my fourth year, I was offered, even before that, I was offered a lectureship in New College. Not a fellowship, lectureship. But I moved to New College to live in September 1938. And I remained living in New College from September 38 to November, mid-November, or even late November, 38.
Yes.
So that was something like 2.5 months.
Yes.
During that period, I was very, I didn't like it. In 38, I became a fellow of New College for my own free volition.
Yes.
I left All Souls.
I remember.
And then I was quite happy.
In 32, you were in New College.
Yeah, for 2.5 months.
For 2.5 months.
Then I was elected All Souls.
And then All Souls. Now, in 38...
I resigned All Souls.
Yes.
I became a fellow of New College.
And you said that then you were happier.
I succeeded Crossman.
Yes.
Much happier. I wouldn't have gone to New College. I didn't have to go.
Yes. But...
I could have stayed.
Yes.
At All Souls.
And that's the period you said that Joel joined and Bullock joined?
No, that was after the war.
That's
after the war.
Yes. Now, in 38, you said...
46.
Again?
46.
In 38... You stayed a 2 years, no more. I mean, after
that's right.
And then you say you were happier, but still, I had the feeling that you said you told me that there were not so many people to talk to in the college.
Well, there were more than there were 32, but I wasn't not enough. I mean, I was in Gordon quite well. I wouldn't have gone there if I didn't feel the company was sympathetic.
And yet. again.
But in 1950
yes.
or 49, I found New College terribly boring again. And went back to Tall Souls. But not only for the, not only because New College was boring, that was different. Because I didn't want to be, didn't want to continue philosophy. That was the reason for leaving All Souls. Not because of the common room. The common room was quite all right in 1949.
Yeah,
absolutely all right.
Uh-huh. Even to compare with, I see, yes. I
enjoyed All Souls much more. But it was perfectly, life was perfectly tolerable in New College.
So, and then you went to All Souls in 1950.
Yes.
And you found it was not the same All Souls that you remembered from 1970.
No, not quite, but not that different.
But not that different. I mean,
the difference between 1940 and 1950, which was not very great.
I mean,
the war in between.
I mean, you know, this myth, which is partly real, that All Souls was the pillar of the...
No longer. No longer. These people are gone or dead. Yes. Some are still here. They're no longer in power. Labour government. So they didn't count.
Yes. As you said, only Douglas Jay was. And Douglas Jay was not that important in the Labour government. He was a junior minister.
Yeah, to begin with.
Well, in 1950, he might have been, yes.
50, he was in the Treasury.
In the Treasury, this
he was in those groups.
Yes.
He was in financial secretary.
Yes.
And then he became a Board of Trade.
Now, but in daily life, I mean, there are periods in college like All Souls that life is more social, political, I don't know what, and periods in which it's more academic, and
yes.
From this point of view, could you compare All Souls of the 50s to All Souls of the 30s?
Yes, I mean, the political part was entirely weekends, not the weekdays. Weekdays, it was absolutely academic. Well, not entirely, because these junior fellows were not all academic. It was kind of lively company, many more junior than senior, but still to the college. The weekends came these statesmen and men of the world and people around England. After 1950, they declined. Geoffrey Dawson was probably alive, but not functioning, and died soon after.
Amory
died soon after.
Simon.
When did Amory die?
Said in the early 50s probably.
I think so. Because I remember writing him a letter in 1947 to save Jerusalem. When it was under siege. Yeah. As you see, so I remember he was certainly in power then. Wait a moment. Who else would have been here? Halifax was
Chancellor.
Yes, but they didn't. He was Chancellor, yes. Yes, he was. Wells certainly was. Not already Chancellor. He became Chancellor in the 30s. But he wasn't at all so as much. Lionel Curtis was alive, but no longer as important as he was. The Clifton set had become discredited. Politically, you see, particularly under the Labour government. Who else were they? Sir Dougal Orr Malcolm, head of the South Africa Company. He was here still, but old, and they became decrepit, these people. They were not succeeded by a similar group of young, active conservatives. I mean, Harry Hodgson was editor of the Sunday Times. All right. Quite a good position, but not quite the same position of power. I don't know who else were they. Quentin Hogg was in Parliament, certainly. I think he was in the House of Lords then, but he may already. House of Commons, I can't remember.
You mean
when he renounced his peerage, Lord Hailsham.
He was still in
he renounced power. His peerage.
He Artefeld a little later.
Maybe.
I think.
And then when he got to Parliament later. And that's laws, you see.
Yes,
sure. I can't when his father died.
That's what I can't remember either.
No. But he didn't renounce. Yeah. He must renounce immediately. Yes. You can't renounce later.
Yeah.
Whenever that was.
Yeah.
And then was in the House of Commons. And then became a peer again. That's what happened to him. But these people weren't of central importance. I'm trying to think, it's the Labour government, only Jay.
Let's say people from the city, Archbishop of Canterbury.
He was dead. Lang was gone.
And Fisher was not.
Fisher has nothing to do with us.
You were still not...
Saul was simply academic, plus occasional people from London came. They were quite lively. They did quite... Some of them were in quite interesting posts. I wish I could remember who they were at that time. But I can't remember very clearly. John Foster was a very active barrister. Who else was about? Salter was a member of parliament, who had been professor. Henderson, who became warden afterwards, was much involved in government affairs, but he was not quite safe. There was a contact with London, nothing like the 30s.
Now, you were not married then yet.
No.
So you would go very often to dinners in the college?
Well, I lived here.
You lived here?
Certainly. Because I dined quite normally.
And on Fridays, you went very often to other colleges? Or?
Not particularly on Fridays.
I mean, high tables and...
Yes, occasionally. I dined elsewhere, yes. In ordinary way, even if people invited me. I used to go to New College occasionally still. David Cecil was there, so I used to...
So your friends there in the 50s were in the university, that David Cecil, Herbert was already here.
Herbert was certainly here, and by this time, in the early 50s, he moved to his chair in University College. He left New College after me, but he left it. James Droll left it for St. Anthony's. Who was then here? Christopher Cox, who I knew, was in the colonial office. I'm trying to think. Woodward, who I knew, but didn't like very much, went to Princeton Institute. First became one kind of professor, then another kind. First went to Balliol, then went to Worcester, and after, as my friend Pear said, kicking two perfectly good chairs into the gutter, went to America. Sumner was warden in All Souls. Who else was in New College then?
Stuart was here.
Stuart was in London. Stuart was a fellow, but a £50 fellow. He wasn't an academic fellow, because there was a question whether he should be renewed. And he was accused of sexual misconduct. And there was a scandal about all that.
Stuart?
Oh, yes. Stuart went off with the wife of Freddie Eyre in 1937.
It was well known.
Certainly. Now, during the war, Keith Feiling, who was at Christchurch, and would became professor here, after Homan, became professor of history. For 2 or 3 years, very old, went to see the warden, Adams, and said, a very bad situation has occurred. One of my colleagues, Alfred Eyre, has lost his wife to your colleague, Stuart Hampshire. They're both philosophers. They are likely to meet in philosophical societies. We're a small society here, and if either they will speak to each other, either they won't speak to each other, which will be awkward, or they will speak to each other, which will be disgusting. Therefore, you must get rid of Hampshire, who is the adulterer.
Adam's failing. It was his own initiative.
And then Adam's given to me, as Stuart's best friend, told me this. And said, what should I do? I said, there is a war going on. They're both officers, both fighting in the war, both in the British Army. You can't do anything now. You can't do anything while they're in the army. It would be monstrous. You see, you must wait till the end of the war, and then we shall see what can be done. It's an awkward situation, admittedly, and people will take different views about it. And I said you must talk to Professor Ryle, who is a friend of both. And Ryle did talk to Ryle. Ryle said, filing act entirely on his own. It's absolutely monstrous what he did. People at Christchurch didn't feel this in the least. So, nothing happened during the war. Stuart went to Gambia, Freddie R. went to Sierra Leone, or vice versa. I can't remember what happened. And then Adams retired at the end of the war. We then had Sumner from Balliol. Sumner was a great friend of Stuart's, and being a very cowardly man, was particularly anxious not to be thought to be in favor of him. So he raised the issue. Stuart had come to an end of his, so to speak, original fellowship, which is for 7 years. He was elected in 36. The 7 years ended in 43, but the war didn't count. So he had 4 more years from 45 onwards. So towards the end of that period, the question was, should he be renewed? He applied for a research fellowship, which Sumner was very nervous about this, refused on the ground there might not be enough rooms in which he could teach. And he set up a special committee called the Room Allocation Committee to prove that it wasn't a room. It was disgraceful, really. It was very obvious what was happening. Then, by this, after 1950, when I left All Souls, the Stuart's term was up. He was not given the research fellowship. He was still a fellow. Question about his renewal. There was a debate. Very acrimonious debate. But the majority voted for him.
In the college?
In the college. The majority voted for him. So he was retained, but without any money. Simply as a fellow. But by this time, he was first in the Foreign Office, then he was in the Ministry of Food. In 47, he was certainly in the Ministry of Food.
He worked with Nolbeck.
You mean the Foreign Office? That was the Foreign Office. Nolbeck was in the Foreign Office. He was Minister of State under Bevin.
Yes, for a while. And then he was...
Under Bevin, yes. Under Attlee. Yes. Before that, Stuart was in the war.
Yes.
He was secretary, yes, certainly. He went to Noel Baker to Geneva and all that. Certainly, certainly. But he went to the Foreign Office at the beginning. He was in the intelligence until the end of the war. At the end of the war, Labour government. Noel Baker. He was with Noel Baker, the present Lady Rothschild, till the end of the Labour government, but not quite to the end. In 47, he was transferred to the Ministry of Food under John Strachey.
Ah, yes.
You see?
Yes.
And then he remained there. In 50, he was still there. Yes. Then Conservative government must have come in when? 51 or 2. 50, I resigned New College. He succeeded me in New College. Then there was debate in New College. People talked against him. On those grounds. The whole point was that Mrs. Eyre didn't marry him. She refused. He would have married her at any moment. But she thought marriage was an obsolete institution, talked about a dog collar, and they lived together. She didn't marry him. That put him in an anomalous position.
Had she married him, so everything would be all right?
Perfectly. By that time. I would guess so. I would guess so. I'll tell you in a moment why I think that. I'll tell you an amazing story. But anyway, then there was a great debate in your college. I was present at this debate. I was still there, still a fellow when this happened. And three people talked against him very forcibly. But fortunately, the warden of New College liked him. Smith was his name. So he was elected. And he became my successor. New College, quite simply, became the philosopher with heart. It was certainly the best period in New College philosophy, I would say. You see? And then he came back to All Souls as person.
Stuart?
Yes. Debate again. Yeah. But by this time, still not married. He came back. Because he wanted to do research. And now he came back in 54. Then he became professor in London. Succeeding Fred Eyre, who became professor in New College. Box and Cox. And then he went to Princeton as professor. That's the whole story of Stuart.
So the affair lingered
until 50.
Until 50?
No, it lingered. It was not mentioned when the question of the best issue came up. Mm. Nobody objected to him openly because he was not yet married to her. He did marry her quite soon after that because he had to go to the University of Illinois and there to live. That was very straight, I mean, difficult. So she agreed reluctantly. They were married in some Chicago registry office. They were married in the end, yes.
And all this, I mean, it's gossip, but it is interesting. You, all this period, what did Freddie feel? I mean,
Freddie, the following. When she left him, well, it's a complicated situation. There was a time when Freddie always believed she would come back to him, but she kept him in that belief. She played them both, against one against the other. They would have been denied, but that's exactly what she did. All through the war, Freddie believed she would come back. He was terribly humiliated by what happened. Terribly. At the end of the war, he still believed it, I think. But in the end, Freddie, who in his 40s, late 40s, still went on. And in 19... I forgot one little item. After Stuart failed to get back to All Souls, and I was still a fellow of New College, she forced Freddie to make him his assistant in University College London.
To make
Stuart his number two, but very generously. He did because he always obeyed her orders. At that time they spoke to each other. With difficulty. But they did. I mean, relations were not too terrible. In 1950, when he came back to New College, for some reason they became bitter enemies. And remains so to this day. And each says things about the other, which are extremely violent and totally untrue.
To this day.
And totally untrue. They accuse each other of totally unreal conduct. And I knew them both. Each, I don't know about facts, but the attributes, the qualities of character, are completely wild. In both cases. That is the fault of the late Mrs. Eyre.
And did it upset something in the philosophical community of your generation?
No.
After all,
no.
Those were sensitive
no.
figures.
No.
He didn't.
In no degree.
How come? It's interesting.
Why? I mean, people realize.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes somebody is friends either or.
No. There's no split.
It's very interesting.
People didn't. I mean, people would talk to Stuart, talk to Freddie. And vice versa. Nobody in the philosophical community may not have liked it. They didn't show it in any fashion. Nor did anybody in Oxford. Let me explain to you. Before the war, if you went off, if a don went off, somebody, not his wife, he resigned immediately. no question, being kept on. There was a man in your college who was a research fellow in biology who certainly had to go. I wasn't a fellow, but I was told that. The ex-chaplain of Balliol, who went off with somebody in Balliol during the war, was immediately removed by Lindsay. Christopher Hill went off with somebody, and I think the master who liked him said, well, if it's kept out of the press, maybe we'll keep you, but if it's in the press, you must go. It was kept out of the press. The trouble about Stuart was, it appeared in the Oxford Mail. It didn't appear anywhere else. A Captain Hampshire was a correspondent. That was the trouble. Otherwise, it could have been kept quiet. Because Freddie, I wouldn't have done anything against him. You see, it's only because it became public. That's how filing found out. The thing changed when Trevor Roper went off with a wife of a vice admiral, NATO vice admiral in Paris, the daughter of Lord Haig. To his wedding, there came a Scottish Presbyterian church. To the reception came, given in the cavalry club by Lord Haig, her brother, came two canons of Christchurch and the dean's wife. That settled the difference. After that, free for all. You see, that altered the entire morality.
So, I mean, a real revolution took place...
Quietly. I noticed it. I'm the only person who tells that story. I noticed that was the moment at which morality changed, or was recognized to have changed. Fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that's what happened.
Now let's come to All Souls After Wolfson.
Yes. Let me tell you about leaving All Souls for Wolfson. You didn't ask me that.
Yes, but we spoke very shortly about it. You left for Wolfson. I mean, the whole story of caring for those dons that didn't have fellowships in colleges and...
No, but that didn't affect me very much.
I see.
That's why Wolfson existed.
Yes.
But I mean, the question is, why did I leave All Souls to do this?
Yes.
I was quite a happy professor.
Yes.
First I was a research fellow, and then I became professor, same college, so I simply changed the quality of the fellowship. First of all, I did not want to go on being professor of social and political theory. Why not? Because I felt, probably, that I was too historically minded, that there were a great many political issues which were boiling in England, and that a professor of political theory should have views about them. And I didn't have very strong views, not strong enough to, so to speak, discuss them or analyze them for the benefit of the students. And that came home to me when there was a book published about the Vietnam War. There had been a book about the Spanish Civil War, edited by Leonard Wolff's nephew. Something Wolf, in which most people, of course, were anti-Franco, and some people were pro, like Evelyn Waugh, Roy Campbell, or the other Catholics. Same thing was done with the Vietnam War. I was invited to participate, for and against. I did it, but I didn't enjoy doing it. I thought, here am I have not a very clear view. If I am attacked on it, I'm not sure. All I said, I said something typically which displeased both sides. What I said was that I didn't believe in political crusades. And therefore, I would not have gone to war, maybe, but I didn't believe in betraying friends either. Therefore, the idea of getting out of Vietnam and telling them, very sorry, you can't go on, do your best for yourselves, that even what Mr. Lippmann suggested, which is that the ports should be occupied and the pro-American Vietnamese should live in those towns, if that was feasible, I was in favor of that. But I didn't think it very likely. But I thought that on their own massacres were worse than wars. And there might be a massacre, and for that the Americans would be responsible. Now that hate, both sides hated. I was attacked by, what's his name?
Don't you tell me about it. Peregrine Worthorn.
Peregrine Worthorn attacked me on the one end, and Conacher the Bride on the other. See? That's my regular condition, of course. So then I thought, if I can't have a strong view on Vietnam and similar issues, and what do I feel about Labour Party, socialism? I left the Labour Party because of Bevin, simply, because of Palestine policy.
Were you a member of the Labour Party?
I was before the war. Certainly. Not very active,
yes,
not at all. But I went to this famous pink lunch, I told you.
Yes, that's
not it. Well, I didn't think many. I think we all were members of the Labour Party. Then, and then no, I left it over Bevin entirely. Then I thought, well, here I am, sort of lib-lab, sort of in the middle. Maybe that's wrong for political theory. I can't just go on discussing the past thinkers in whom alone I take an interest. Because fundamentally, I just want to list of ideas, Russian thinkers, that kind of thing, you see. That's one factor. So I got a bit tired of it. The other factor was, I think, an election here, which went wrong, which had a profound effect on me, profounder than I ever thought it would. That reminds me of something. There was a research fellowship was offered, and there's a man called Kreisel, K-R-E-I-S-E-L, with a mathematical logician of very great powers, whom the Research Fellowships Committee, of which I was a member, put top, easily the most distinguished. He was not elected because people thought he was being polite, he was rude, various people didn't like him, for very frivolous reasons. He got a big majority against him. I thought I did not want to go on belonging to a college where academic values were not sufficiently respected. I was shocked. Deeply shocked. You see, I didn't resign, of course, immediately or anything, but when I was in America and I received this telegram, whatever it was, from the Vice Chancellor, saying, what about Iffley College, as it's called? I didn't say no. I'll come home, I'll consider it.
Now,
that's what happened.
When you were shocked about it, did you discuss with somebody in the college?
Oh, everybody, yes. Everybody. There was a protest meeting in which I took part. Private,
yes.
Protest meeting to discuss what could be done. Nothing could be done, but there was a meeting of people saying this was very bad. Oh, yes.
It was already Sparrow or Sumner?
Sparrow. Yes. Who didn't mind at all. Wasn't very interested. Didn't think it was terrible. Didn't think anything. Couldn't care less. But it was a kind of Philistine vote on the part of a lot of academics who thought he was a rather rude and difficult man, Viennese Jew, you see, on the one hand, and all the London people. Letters were received from Sesnick, was a French thing, couldn't tell us exactly what, but he was such an awful man that really we shouldn't think about him, so on. Turned out, he was very rude to the servants, probably rude to the fellows. So he came here for a term, the visiting fellow, and made enemies. Bad luck, he said. Made enemies.
Yes.
I get on. He's back in Oxford, curiously enough. He's a fellow of the Royal Society. And he's very difficult. He's not a very nice man. But intellectually, tip-top, still is. Very, pure Wittgenstein greatly admired him.
Now, at this period, you met I mean, you married. I mean, you met.
I met. Yes. How well? I met Aline. Shall I tell you the whole story?
You told me parts of the story.
About the marriage.
The stages that you married her. Let's.
I told you about 1941. All that.
You met her on the boat.
I didn't meet her. We were on the boat.
You were not.
I saw her, yes.
And remembered her. And apparently she made a sort of impression on you.
Certainly.
And she...
I made an impression on her. On her. She did not remember.
And she was on her way to America, flying from Portugal or from...
We went by boat.
No? I mean, fleeing.
Fleeing, yes.
Yes. And then you, again, you met her in this in New York, in a certain party that you were asked to by some of the Rothschilds.
Robert Rothschild. So I saw 2 minutes exactly.
And?
I saw exactly 2 minutes. She left immediately. Then I saw with Victor Rothschild. I stayed 10 minutes.
It was in Pierre.
Pierre is correct. And then I met her when Victor asked me to look after Professor Alban when he came to Oxford. I met again in New York. Then they came here in 1946.
And then you...
became friends.
And you were more or less a bachelor.
Yes, yeah. Not more or less. More. More or less. Certainly. Had no designs.
You were a typical bachelor don.
Absolutely.
And your friends thought that you would be...
Forever.
And now, how did they take the fact that you married?
I have no idea. They were extremely surprised.
They were extremely surprised. And how did it influence your life? I mean, gradually...
Of course. Well, I can't tell you. Difficult question.
After all, it is...
It did influence my life. First of all, living in a house is different from living in a room. I lost a certain number of friends, which are always just by marriage.
Yeah, but that's interesting.
I gained some friends of hers. She lost some of her friends, which always happens in marriage. The total number of friends diminished. My social life was very active in London between 1944 and 1954 or 1955 became contracted. You see, because there was less opportunity for it, because I stayed at home rather more.
But I mean, yes, well, all right.
I didn't go. I used to stay weekends with people. I no longer enjoyed that. She never did.
She never did.
Not much. You see, so I became more domesticated. I was much happier because I used to get rather lonely in the evenings, and I felt I didn't know that I really wanted to be bachelor for the rest of my life. And I married her because I fell in love directly and very deeply. That is my sole reason for marriage. It was not desire for married life as such, not desire to leave all souls as a bachelor, nothing except being in love. My sole motive, not modified by anything whatever.
And
in due course, she fell in love with me.
You fell in love first?
Yes, certainly. She liked me very much. When we went to America together, the same boat, in 1948, Christmas time, we behaved like what the French call four ménages, we were together. We will get a great many friends on that boat for some reason. On the same boat, by some accident, in Christmas or sort of December 48, I was going to Harvard. They were on that boat, Alain de Rothschild, his wife, Siegmund Warburg, Alec Duggan, Judy Montague, people I knew. Ronnie Tree was in his wife, 48.
What's
December 48.
What were all of you doing in the same boat?
I was going to Harvard.
You were going to Harvard.
And she was going to see her mother in New York. In New York.
You were already, of course.
Very well I knew her.
Already.
I was very into it. Yes. We were intimate friends. Okay. But you see, there were all these people, endless parties on the boat. We all knew each other very well. There was Monsieur Marjolin of the CED. There was Michael Frank Figures, the civil servant, who I knew very well. I had about 15 friends on that boat, and petrol parties in various cabins. Brian Urquhart, Dr. Katkoff, all in the boat.
In the same boat. What month of the year was it?
December 48. It took 12 days because it fouled itself in the harbour at Cherbourg. We came back to England and then went off again 2 days later. It took a very long time. Well, Aline and I were inseparable. But, we never had any affair of any kind until we were married. There was no affair in technical sense. That didn't happen. Well, it didn't quite exactly we married. Certainly not until he left her, or she left him. But it was very stormy, our courtship.
How did you court? I mean,
it's a very stormy story.
Stormy.
Where did I leave it last time?
Pardon?
Where did I leave the story last time? Where did we stop last time about this? Just now. We're in 49.
We're in 49.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Nothing happened in 49. I think I fell in love with her. I should say, in some sense of the word, in 51, not later, certainly. Or was it earlier? Aix-en-Provence Music Festival together in the late summer of 49, but I don't think I was in love with her then, no. I don't think so. Maybe I was not knowing it. 51 I knew myself to be. I did not speak of it. So in 51 I was, she was married, she had by this time 3 children, one by one husband, 2 others. I thought it was quite hopeless. I simply continued to be hopelessly in love with her. I never confessed anything. Whether she felt it or not, I can't describe to you. We went on seeing each other a great deal. 52, I was in America for mostly. Still I came back. 53, we saw each other a great many times. And what happened then, Whitman, in the proper order. In 53, why am I speaking 54? That's what bothers me. No. We are 53. In 53, we began writing each other intimate letters, which only people who had some kind of what the French call amitié amoureuse have. We didn't have an affair, but there's no doubt that we were in some sense, more than normal affection. We had some kind of relationship, of an emotional kind. I was in Geneva with my mother, who had to see an eye specialist. And I was going from there to Nice with her for the Passover. It's a good kosher restaurant there for her. Aline was in Paris. I talked on the telephone from Geneva. And Dr. Alban intercepted this conversation. He listened on another receiver and made a violent scene. It was quite clear that we were talking in an improper manner. Confessed feelings for each other, one kind or another. He said that he would divorce her and keep the children. Made a very violent scene. We were jealous and passionate and kind. I was realized by that time she was not in love with him. That is clear. And I only liked him for about half an hour while he drove. We were driven from Mrs. Otto Kahn's house to the Thayer flat in 1946. After that, I never liked him at all. Perhaps maybe that is a little easier. It's more difficult if one goes off with the wife of a great friend. But I never liked him. I thought he was heavy and snobbish and boring and not, just not a nice person. And anyhow, you see. And so then I received a letter from him in Nice, which said, I'm very sorry, this must end. I must go back. My children, so on, I have a family. I can't go on, this is no good. That made me ill. So I must be very much in love. And I took to my bed in Nice and remained there for about 2 days, I should say. However, I came back to Oxford. And then there was a party about a fortnight after I came back, to which I invited Alan Price Jones, the well-known man of letters, who was staying with the Albans. I had invited them before all this to a party which I was giving here in All Souls. Dr. Alban was afraid that if it became known that we had a certain specific rift, his position in Oxford might be damaged. So he told her that we must behave as if we were still great friends. That itself shows you the kind of man he was. His career is what mattered. So they came to this party. Aline looked like a sheep led to the slaughter. I didn't speak to her, nor did she speak to me. I talked to him quite amiably. I mean, I pretended and so on. Nothing. I can't remember how I knew they were coming. I think he rang up and said, by the way, we're coming. Is that all right? I said, yes, yes. Then nothing happened. Then, about a fortnight after this, we're now in winter 53. Nice was spring. And then summer 53. She delivered me and said, we must meet. So we began to meet secretly. We met in shops, we met in cars, met in London. About the, in summer of 53, they went on a holiday. I had to avoid going to places of which they were. We had some common friends with both whom we stayed. I was very careful not to. We corresponded secretly. We sent letters to accommodation addresses. Heaven knows what happened. But it went on. And she said, no, it must be. She was not prepared to break with me for one single moment. And she began not to be able to bear it. Still, it sort of went on. She said, you know, my life is like a vase that has been cracked. I'm trying to hold the bits together. But I don't quite know how long this goes on.
She said it to you?
She said it to me. At the end of the summer, about autumn, 53. He was very anxious to preserve relations. And he asked for the meals, all kinds of things like that. We went on seeing each other secretly. About the, I should say, end of 53, maybe November, I remember making an appointment with her to meet in a chemist opposite All Souls. There's no chemist there now. There's a wine shop. I delivered the lecture at 11 o'clock and went to 12 o'clock, 10 o'clock I think. 11 o'clock I went to the chemist and I saw Alban and her at the street corner. How he discovered, I don't know, but we think that he had a put on detective onto me. And tapped telephones, and did all that. And the informant said, his jealousy was unbelievable. Wait, I think there must be an intermediate moment, which I haven't told you about. The date is what bothers me. I think before this happened, and before the telephone conversation occurred,